From Greenville to Jersey Shore, Uniontown to Lebanon, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, it is crunch time for approving new congressional and legislative district maps in Pennsylvania, but consensus has been hard to find. Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting is here with an update. The Barber National Institute provides high-quality services to children and adults with autism and intellectual disabilities. Joe Geiger has Patrick Barber of the Institute in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And halfway through the current state legislative session, Americans for Prosperity has published its scorecard. Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity has details on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Chris Nicholas in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. State Senator Doug Mastriano, who became a grassroots social media sensation fighting Governor Tom Wolf's draconian COVID-19 measures, has announced his candidacy for the Republican gubernatorial nomination. In so doing, Mastriano joins a large field of 15 candidates vying for the GOP nod. On the Democratic side, Attorney General Josh Shapiro remains the lone candidate. The seat is open because Governor Wolf is term limited and cannot seek re-election. The 2024 presidential election is still over 2 years away, but the political parties have begun planning for their national conventions, and the city of Pittsburgh appears to be on the short list of contenders as a site for the Republican National Convention. The GOP is also considering Milwaukee, Nashville, and Salt Lake City. Halfway through the budget year, state government finds itself in the unusual position of having a $1.5 billion revenue surplus. December's revenues were 14% above projections. Revenue has held up far better than anticipated as the nation continues to struggle with the COVID-19 pandemic. The 2022-2023 budget process begins this month as committees begin holding hearings with the goal of passing a new spending plan by the end of June. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The State House of Representatives this past week took the first official step to enacting new congressional districts, but significant disagreements are likely to derail the process. To learn more, we turn now to veteran political consultant Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting. Chris, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Chris, we are now at crunch time for having congressional as well as our state Senate and state House district redistricting done. This has to be accomplished over the next couple of weeks. So let's start with congressional redistricting. And as a refresher for those who may not remember or may not know, how is congressional redistricting done in Pennsylvania?
So Loman, again, good to be with you. Thanks for having me on. Here in Pennsylvania, congressional redistricting is done just like any other bill in the legislature. The budget, naming June National Peach Month or anything like that. So essentially, a bill has to pass the state House and pass the state Senate and then be signed by the governor. That means you need 102 votes in the state House, 26 in the state Senate, and the governor signing it. So the bill would be basically a listing of every municipality in the state into a certain congressional district. The wrinkle this time is that for the first redistricting effort in modern history, one party does not control all three levers. So in the past, it was either a Republican-controlled legislature with a Republican governor or a Democratic-controlled legislature with a Democratic governor. So now, these two disparate groups, Democratic Governor Tom Wolf and the Republican-controlled State House and State Senate, need to work together. And sometimes those folks, Loman, can't agree on what day it is. So they have to put a bill together that everybody can live with. And it's kind of a situation where if everybody doesn't like the final product, that's probably an indication that it's the best way possible.
To date, Chris, the State House has taken the lead in this, and they have released a proposed map. Tell us a little bit about that map and how we got to it.
So the State House, led by Representative Seth Grove of York County, who chairs the State Government Committee, chose a map done by a citizen activist named Amanda Holt out of the Lehigh Valley, and they tweaked it a little bit and then presented it. Governor Wolf was asked to comment on it, and at first didn't, and later came out and said he didn't like the map. I think what's important for everyone to understand is that before you even look at the map of the new districts, what happened first was the map that was drawn eliminates a safe Republican congressional district. So that's already a big sacrifice by the GOP. And in this national atmosphere where the U.S. House of Representatives is only Democratic plus 5 or 6, giving up a safe Republican seat is a big sacrifice. So then what happens is you have to parcel those communities in the Republican House district that has been eliminated out to neighboring districts. So what happens is the Republicans give up a seat, and the Democrats have a couple seats around that that get either less Democratic or more Republican or both. And that's kind of, to me, a best-case outcome. The governor did not appreciate that. There are some folks on the Democratic side who want to equate the results in a statewide election to the results in elections we do by district, like for Congress or the legislature. So their line is, hey, Joe Biden got 50.1% of the vote in 2020 for president, so therefore 50.1% of the district should be Democratic. And as I remind people, it's not so much how many people, how many Republicans or Democrats or independents you have in a state. You also have to layer in where those people are clustered. So Democrats happen to be clustered more in the cities, so they have districts that are overwhelmingly Democratic, whereas Republicans have districts that may be more even Steven or only slightly Republican. So Democrats have an easier way of it because they don't really have to worry about general elections in a lot of their districts, whereas Republicans do. So that's the rub, is how do you figure out how to parcel out those districts. And this current map would be basically one or two more Republican districts than Democratic, but it would have what is becoming a dying breed across the country. It would have two or three toss-up districts. And as you look across the country, Loman, and see what's happening in redistricting, whether it's in a state controlled by the Republicans or the Democrats or whatever, those competitive seats are withering on the vine.
Well, we have this situation now, Chris, where the Republican map, the Republican proposed map, in fact, eliminated a Republican seat, which, as you mentioned, is quite a sacrifice for Republicans. The governor even doesn't like that. What happens if the legislature and the governor can't agree?
Representative Seth Grove has pointed out that there's a part of the law that says if you can't get your act together and create districts, everybody runs at large, which means you would not have 17 congressional races in 17 districts. You would have one statewide race where everybody running for Congress would be running that statewide, and then the top 17 would win. So it happened once in our history in the 1890s when the legislature just didn't get around to redistricting for a while. I don't think that'll happen again, but that's what would happen if no one can come to a conclusion. If there is a map and it gets challenged in court, then it could go to the Supreme Court, and we could have a repeat of what happened here, unfortunately, in 2018, where the state Supreme Court took it upon themselves to say, hey, even though it's nowhere in the Constitution, we're going to draw the congressional lines ourselves. And that was a catastrophe. And there is some thinking on the Republican side that the Democrats are playing a rope-a-dope or delay tactics to kind of back into a situation that would force the Supreme Court to come in, because it is currently controlled 5-2 by the Democrats.
We are talking with Chris Nicholas, a veteran political consultant with Eagle Consulting. So far, we've been talking about congressional redistricting. At the same time, we have to redistrict our legislative, that's the state House and state Senate lines, a very different process. So, Chris, tell us a bit about that process.
So this is called reapportionment, hence the creation of the Legislative Reapportionment Commission, the LRC. That is comprised of the House and Senate Republican and Democratic leaders, and then a fifth member, usually appointed by the PA Supreme Court. That fifth member this time is Mark Nordenberg, the former chancellor at the University of Pittsburgh. And they came up with two different maps, one for the state House and one for the state Senate. The state Senate map, which was worked out with the Republican and Democratic leaders of the Senate caucuses and then presented to Nordenberg, that passed unanimously, 5-0 in that commission. And most people thought, well, it helps incumbents a lot and doesn't do a lot else, but moves one Republican district from a safe area to a slightly more competitive area, but that's okay. The state House map only passed 3-2. Both Republicans voted against it. And that has caused a hornet's nest of controversy over this. Now, inherently, Loman, drawing a map of 50 Senate districts is easier than drawing a map of 203 House districts, right? Because the more districts you have to draw, the more decisions you have to make. So that map has been seen by most outside observers as heavily favoring the Democrats, and the scuttlebutt from within the LRC is that at almost every turn, when presented with a thorny decision, that fifth tie-breaking vote, Mark Nordenberg, sided with the House Democrats in putting that map together. So you have, for example, 14 House Republicans that have been put into districts with each other, which means they'll have to primary each other, then automatically the GOP, you know, loses seven members. Only two Democrats have been put in that situation. In the five instances where a Republican and a Democratic incumbent have been put together, in all five cases, the way the district was drawn, the geography and the registration heavily favor the Democrats. So to me, it's hard to say those things all happened by coincidence. And the third thing that happened is a lot of our third-class cities, Reading, Allentown, Lancaster, and Harrisburg, were broken apart by the Democrats on purpose and used to create additional seats where you take a portion of a very Democratic city and then lop some suburban area onto it, but in a fashion that still favors the city portion of it. So that's never happened before. If Republicans had proposed that years ago, they would have caught a lot of you-know-what for it. So Chairman Nordenberg has said publicly he thinks there will be some changes before the map is finally proposed and certified later this month. So it would be hard to imagine on the state House side the map being any worse for the GOP. So we'll have to wait and see. But that process is a little bit more on track than the congressional one.
Chris Nicholas from Eagle Consulting. Chris, if we have listeners who would like to learn more about what you do, where can they find you?
Thank you, Loman. On the internet, you can find more about my firm at eagleconsult.com, and I'm active on Twitter at Eagle63. Thank you.
The Erie-based Barber National Institute provides high-quality services to children and adults with autism, intellectual disabilities, or behavioral health challenges. To learn more, Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Patrick Barber of the Barber National Institute in the Community Benefit Spotlight. Joe?
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Patrick, for being a guest in the Lincoln Radio program. Patrick, tell us a little bit about what inspired the Barber family to start this National Institute for People with Autism.
Our organization, the Dr. Gertrude A. Barber Center, began in 1952 by my great aunt, Dr. Gertrude Barber. Dr. Gertrude Barber was an administrator with the Erie School District, and in her position, often had to tell parents that their choice with their children with intellectual disabilities was either to have their child sent to a distant institution or keep them at home because there weren't any programs for their education within the school district. Gertrude could not accept this. She had a doctorate in special education from Penn State, and she began the organization in the basement of a local Boys and Girls Club and YMCA. And it really grew from there. And now today we serve over 5,000 people with intellectual disabilities, ranging from anywhere from birth all the way through when the individual is deceased. And so she was a true visionary of where this industry needed to go, and was the first in our neck of the woods, and I believe in the entire state of Pennsylvania, to provide services and education to people with disabilities.
It seems like the education system still wrestle with what's the best way to serve the autism community. We've seen a lot of improvements because of the number of programs that are going on now, but why aren't we a little further down the road in our school systems with identifying it and partnering with organizations like yours?
I can certainly understand that sentiment, and I believe that there's a special understanding that needs to be given to the various school districts and organizations throughout the Commonwealth. And I think providers like us that really specialize in these services can provide that. We have a lot of experience advocating for and providing services to people with intellectual disabilities, and I think there's a wealth of knowledge within not just our organization, but other providers such as us to teach the school district and to teach anyone that would be interested to how to provide an adequate and appropriate education.
From looking at your website, it does appear that this is a family-driven organization. Dr. Barber founded the organization in 1952, and there are a number of Barbers featured on your website. What's unique, or what's challenging, or what's great about having your family together in on the project?
That's true. So Dr. Gertrude started us in 1952. She had no children of her own. And when she was getting towards the end of her lifetime, brought in my father, John Barber, to groom him and to prepare him to be her successor. And so I think it's really been an interesting life for me and my siblings. We've always been around the Barber National Institute, and it's something that we hold near and dear. And I think really the strength of it is that we see the organization as something that needs to continue whether or not we are at the helm of it.
Yeah, it's interesting because many nonprofit organizations are started with people who have a family member dealing with a physical or emotional or intellectual challenge, like Milton Hershey. His wife could not bear children, and they started a school for orphans. And your grandmother didn't have children, and she started a program for people with autism. It's a commendable dynamic that I think is unique to the United States, and I think very commendable.
We are honestly very grateful for Gertrude's vision, and she was a person that saw a big need, and she decided that she was going to be the one to fill that need. And so I certainly can't take any credit, nor can my father or my siblings, but we really take seriously the expectation that she had, which was to continue her mission and to deliver excellent service to people with intellectual disabilities.
So you inherited the inspiration. This is Joe Geiger in the Lincoln Radio program. My guest today is Patrick Barber. Patrick is with the Barber National Institute, in primarily out of Erie, Pennsylvania, and many other locations across the state. Patrick, serving 5,000 children with autism must require an army of employees. You want to talk a little bit about your employee base and what they contribute to the cause?
So our employees are some of the most caring and selfless individuals that I've come across in my lifetime. The folks that work for us and for providers such as us, they have such an enormous heart, and they really see the the potential in each individual that they're serving. And I think that's really what we do is all about. It's about seeing the potential in each individual and to allow each child and adult with disabilities to be the best person that they can be, because we all deserve a life of dignity and respect, and our employees deliver on that every day.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Patrick Barber with the Barber National Institute in Pennsylvania. Patrick, if people listening to the program want to find out more about you or donate money or volunteer, how can they find you?
You can go to barberinstitute.org. That's barberinstitute.org. That is our flagship website. And from there, in a top right-hand corner, you can donate. There's also a lot of opportunities on there for being a volunteer. We have several events throughout the year, and we can certainly always use any help whenever we can with those various events, and of course, day-to-day helping out with projects around the headquarters. So we really appreciate all the volunteers out there, and we encourage anyone that's interested in giving or volunteering to contact us, and we'll be able to reach out to you.
Congratulations to your staff, and especially to your family members who are investing their lives in the work of people with autism. Thank you for being a guest on the program again. Back to you, Loman.
How has your state senator or House member voted on key issues? Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, talks about their new legislative scorecard on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Last Monday, January 10th, marked the first voting day of the second half of this 2021-2022 legislative session in Harrisburg. It was also the day we released our midterm legislative scorecard. Our goal is simple: to make government more accountable to the people. The scorecard includes more than 3,500 individual votes covering 20 bills in both the State House and State Senate. We have a number of champions, some reaching over 100%, and we encourage you to view the scorecard at pataxpayerscorecard.com. But as we reach this midpoint of the session, we are going to continue to work on the most pressing public policy issues of our time so that we can remove barriers to opportunity. As always, our goal is to ensure that all Pennsylvanians can reach their full potential and have the best shot at their unique version of the American dream. When you look at the scorecard, you'll be able to see our scoring methodologies, how we allocated points for bills we supported and bills we opposed, and how we determined credit for legislators who sponsored aligned priority legislation, and where points were deducted from the scores of members who sponsored unaligned legislation. Working together with policy champions in the General Assembly last year, we received and achieved a number of legislative successes. Several key healthcare reforms have been enacted, all of which will assist in improving access to care for Pennsylvanians. For example, Act 60 recognizes certified registered nurse anesthetist title designation, which will help us retain these skilled professionals. We also passed the Nurse Licensure Compact, now Act 68, which allows PA to join 34 other states in that compact to allow and improve the mobility of nurses. And temporary regulatory flexibility that was instituted as a response to the COVID-19 pandemic has been extended through Act 73. Of course, we saw the restoration of checks and balances to the exercise of gubernatorial emergency powers made possible by the passage of Senate Bill 2. This authorized a referendum on two constitutional amendments limiting the length of emergency declarations and making future declarations subject to renewal by the General Assembly. PA voters approved both of those amendments at the May 18th primary election. And under the terms of those new amendments, the General Assembly ended Governor Wolf's unilateral emergency declaration with the passage of House Resolution 106 on June 10th. But despite these important achievements, the reader won't find the real story of this mid-session scorecard in the 20 bills that we scored. The story instead is told in the lack of follow-through on transformative policies that have yet to receive votes before their respective full chambers and make their way to the governor for his signature or veto or to the voters for direct consideration on the ballots. Some examples of such policies include Senate Bill 25, which would expand nurses' scope of practice. It was referred from committee in June, but remains before the full Senate. House Bill 71, the Taxpayer Protection Act, which would simply place reasonable guardrails on Harrisburg spending, was referred to the House Appropriations Committee in December and remains there. And a dozen bills, five in the House, seven in the Senate, intended to reform our Commonwealth's regulatory process by imposing measures providing increased transparency and accountability, await action in various House and Senate committees after passage by the opposite chamber. Wallet Hub includes PA in their top five states with the highest tax rates in the U.S. And once again, according to North American Moving Services Migration Report, we remain in the top outbound migration states. We urge you to join us in pressing our elected representatives to move the aforesaid legislation so we can begin to realize the impact of transformational policy. Every day, Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania's team wakes to position you to amplify your voice and act. For those of you who have done so, our gratitude truly abounds. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity. Find us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 27 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WBVP-AM and WMBA-AM in Beaver Falls, along with WBFD-AM in Bedford, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.